Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open this meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are located across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you might actually be listening. Obligatory chuckle, thank you. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're going to be talking about step three. So I'm going to read a paragraph. And Kevin and Will have graciously volunteered to share tonight. So welcome them. Thank you. We're going to start off on page 60 with a very familiar paragraph. It closes a lot of the introductory readings at AA meetings. And it simply says, well, let me read step three. It made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Page 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after made clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. Kevin?
All right. My name is Kevin McCloskey and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kevin.
Kevin. My sobriety date is July 27, 2007. When I read this, that short little paragraph of the ABCs, this for me is that's the foundation of my recovery. You know, if I have not admitted to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic and that I am beyond human aid, then I'm not gonna do any of the rest of these steps. You know, they're not gonna matter to me. You know, turning my will over to a power greater than myself is not something that I want to do willingly. And for me, this was just getting with my sponsor and going through the book, the first 60 pages, you know, our description of the alcoholic, you know, to me, I think of the doctor's opinion, you know, Bill's story that describes the progression of the illness and more about alcoholism. It talks about how we are as alcoholics and the fact that once I start to drink, I cannot control the amount of alcohol I take. And the other side of that is that I've lost the power to choose whether or not I drink. You know, that to me is the powerlessness that's it's describing here. And you know, when I get into the chapter agnostic, it shows me that this is what my life looks like without a power greater than myself. And basically, it leads me to misery, jails, institutions, death. You know, I'm suicidal. I can't stop drinking. I can't not drink. And it pretty much sucks. You know, that's basically what it looks like. You know, that's what my life looks like without God. And I never, I had not grown up religious. I did not believe in God. So I didn't know what my life would look like with a God. So, you know, I got to the point where I was so desperate that I was willing to do whatever it took. And when we got to this part in the book, you know, we read through this and I realized that, you know, I couldn't do this on my own, so I needed a power greater than myself. And the thing to do is just to do the remaining steps after this. So that's all I have.
Thanks, Kevin.
I'm going to try it without the mic. If anybody can hear me, just raise your hand in the back. My name is Will Cheney, but I'm an alcoholic. I could manage my life living with untreated alcoholism just fine, thank you. At least that's what I believe. And the more my alcoholism progressed, the more autonomous I became and less dependent on other people in every way. And I liked it. I had the time and money to drink the way I wanted, and nobody around to tell me I couldn't. And that worked very well until one morning I woke up and I experienced that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization I talk about in this book. And I cracked open a bottle of Grand Marnier at 7 in the morning. And I don't know how many I drank that day, but that day I had to drink to chase away that suffering. And when I woke up the next day, I was done. And it wasn't until 3 in the morning that night, slumped on the sofa, that the only thing left to do was to look upward and say, God, please help me. And I sensed a presence in the room, and I believe once I had surrendered, he forgave me all of my antics, and he immediately began to help me. And I came, and within 8 days, God had put a sponsor in my life. And he began to guide me as to what to do. And my father said to me, he's been in the program 20 years at the time, it sounds like you've already done the first 3 steps. But I didn't know anything about turning my will over to God. What happened was I was able to turn my will over to my sponsor. And that took some time. And once I had done that, I knew how to turn my will over to God and have him guide my life instead of calling my sponsor every time my obsessive alcoholic brain went into gear. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to continue on page 16. After, you know, we do the 3 pertinent ideas, A, B, C, it says, being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we're almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like the actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If only his arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous, maybe kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. Kevin?
Yeah, that sounds exactly the way life should go to me when I read that. I like the part where it says, everybody, including himself, would be pleased. If only you guys would behave the way I wanted you to behave, everything would be fine, and I wouldn't need to drink as much as I do, and I wouldn't need to be angry at all you people for not behaving the way I want you to behave. But the fact is, like, I have no control over that. You know, that's the unmanageability. And it's not just that I can't manage people. It's that what goes on in my mind. Like, it's this reality that this fantasy world that I live in, and then I think that this is the way everything should go, this is how it looks. And it always goes totally against that. And then I get angry, I get resentful, and I hate people, I hate you for doing that to me, and my parents are not good enough to me, and why didn't they give me that money when I asked for it, or whatever it is. And that's why I drink, you know. The alcohol is not the problem. It's the symptom of the problem. I drink because I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. And this is the cause of my restless, irritable, and discontent, is how you guys are behaving and how you're not doing what I want you to do, you know? And if you guys would just stop doing that stuff, I would be completely okay, right? But that's not the case. And this type of thinking is, I believe that because I almost died because of this type of thinking, that's what kills alcoholics. It's not the alcohol. It's this thinking that I have that I am God, and that and it's not a conscious thought that I wake up in the morning and I'm God. I'm controlling people. It's that this idea that I should get what I want, and then I can manipulate you to get what I want, and it never works for me. It never works. And depending on how my day is going at the time, I can either be the angry, controlling actor, or I can be the very kind and patient and generous, virtuous actor. But either way, I'm still selfish and self-centered, and it's still my motives are wrong, and I still get the same result. And we will read that in the next paragraph, so I'll pass.
Thanks, Kevin. Anybody not been able to hear me? So I could be quite virtuous because my mother taught me how to live. She gave me all the tools I needed. She taught me 'tis better to give than receive. She told me to love my neighbor. And she taught me to be a gentleman. And she taught me to trust God, and I never got that part. And when I began to drink, it slowly, one micron at a time, began to ebb away. And that's what the women, the beautiful, wonderful women who married me, there were three, by the way, they saw what my mother had taught me. And my second wife would tell me after a night of particularly heavy drinking, she said, I could see last night when your eyes changed. I saw the moment that you changed into another person. And when I did, then those other ugly aspects would come out. And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they brought me back to what my mother had taught me. And I was willing to do what was required. I said, please, to my sponsor, just tell me what to do. And I followed him around like a puppy dog, asking him questions, and he was so patient. He was firm, and that's what I needed, but he was loving. And as a result, I had a spiritual awakening and a psychic change. Thank you.
So we're going to continue on page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think that life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not the victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony. Kevin?
The one thing that stands out to me is when it talks about the players not acting right, he becomes angry, indignant, and self-pitying. And that's me pretty much my whole life, you know, particularly the self-pity. You know, I was really bad with self-pity. I mean, I could sit on my pity pot for hours and hours and just think of all the things that went wrong in my life and how I was not treated right and that, of course, when that's all I think about, of course I'm going to drink. Of course I'm going to drink a lot, because that's the only relief I get, is when I take that drink, I don't care, you know, anymore. I don't care how messed up I think I am. But another thing that stands out is the last sentence. Is he not even in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? And like the first time that I read that, that hit me, because that's how I felt. Because even when I felt like I was doing something, I still screwed it up. I still found a way to screw it up. You know, I felt like I was a perpetual F up. You know, no matter what I did, I'm just, you know, and I can never do good. And that's how I felt, you know, and that's long before I even took a drink. I felt that way. And drinking just made me not care about that anymore, you know. I was okay with being, you know, as long as I had alcohol, I didn't care how bad my life was. But then that stopped working. And I think that's all I have. I'll pass it on to Will.
I have to bring up my third wife, and although a beautiful, wonderful woman, she had a sickness, but not related to alcohol. And I had met my match. And we never lived together, although we got married. She had two daughters, and they didn't want to move, and I had a business here, and I couldn't move. And so we had a weekend marriage. And if they'd all just done what I suggested, everything would have been beautiful. And I never had kids in my life. And here I'm trying to be a stepfather. That didn't turn out well, and as it got worse and worse, just like Kevin was saying, I would sit at home in Suffolk and drink and become angry, indignant, and self-pitying, and I put on the most appropriate song that I could think of that fit in with that and turn it all the way up and dance and drink at her. I loved it. Bob Skaggs, man, he had the best song for that. I saw him recently, by the way. And that just doesn't lead to harmony. It just doesn't. And I threw quite a lot of money at that situation, thinking that that would help, but it never did. And in the end, today, with my dear loved ones, I like to say that because I'm a sober, recovered alcoholic, that my job is to enhance and enrich their lives and create harmony. And I don't try to tell them what to do. And I might make suggestions when we're talking. But I'm just there to hopefully add a little bit to their lives. Thank you.
So we'll continue on page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. Kevin?
Yeah, when I read this paragraph and the preceding paragraph that describes the selfishness and self-centeredness, that's the root of my troubles. When I read that, I think that the first time that I read that, I felt like, okay, wow, this explains a lot. You know, this explains a lot now. You know, and explains that I have a spiritual sickness, and it stems from this self-centeredness. That's the spiritual malady, so to speak, of alcoholism. You know, and that starts all and it starts from in my mind, and that leads to the thinking, which leads me to take the drink. So in order for me to recover from alcoholism, I have to be relieved of this selfishness and self-centeredness. But like it says here, many of us have tried to wish away. You know, I can think many, many times where I just did not want to be the person that I was. I was just like, tried to, and I don't know if that makes any sense. And I can remember a specific instance in my life where I can recall like the extreme self-centered thinking. And it was, I was probably about 21 or 22 years old, and I was living at home with my parents. I dropped out of college, and I was pretty much drinking all the time. And like, I would, every couple of weeks, I would clean out my room when no one was home, and I would just get like 3 or 4 trash bags full of like beer cans, beer bottles, and all this stuff. And but anyway, during that period, my sister was she just started high school, and she had fallen in love with her first boyfriend, and he killed himself. And I can remember my dad asking me to go to the funeral with him, and I said no, I don't like the way funerals make me feel. I don't want to be there. You know, and that's like the most selfish thing I could have said at the moment, because it's my job. Now, today I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, it is my job there to be helpful to my family and to be helpful to my sister. And it was for me, I should have gone, and I ended up going, but I still didn't like it, I didn't help my sister at all or try to, you know, console her or anything. I didn't really care. I just, all I thought about was how that situation affected me. And looking back on that, and I could see that's how selfish that I really was. And that I should have been there for her as a brother. I'm her older brother. It's my job to be there for her. You know, and that's what I try to do today. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me today, is that I need to be there for her. And I try to do that. Today I have a better relationship with my sister than I did at the time. But another thing is that when I read this paragraph, you know, I can't do this without God. It says this here, I use the word higher power, whatever you want to say, but it says God in here. And I can't do these steps or any of this without God. Because if you take out God, it's just me doing it. You know, so if I believe what it said earlier, that I am beyond human aid, then there has to be something other than me involved in this. You know, and another something beyond human. And that includes my sponsor, that includes the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you are all still people. You are not powers greater than me. So I have to find something greater than me. The good news is that I just have to make a decision at this point here that I am not that power, that I'm going to seek this power, whatever it may be. That's all I have.
Thank you, Kevin.
Back in the year 2000, I had everything I always imagined I needed to make myself happy. I had a beautiful, wonderful wife, 12 years younger than me. I was a partner in a business. I had a home, cars, we had plenty of money. And I fell apart, and I went into a black hole of depression. And I had to go see a psychiatrist once a week, and God, how I dreaded it. And she never once said to me, will you have a sickness of the soul that distorts your thinking and causes your emotional state to swing between euphoria and the abyss? If she'd have said that, I would have known what the heck to do with it. That woman was trying to help me, but she didn't have the power. I was as honest with her as I could be, and I got that caused me even more anxiety because I told her how I drank and the drugs I took. And I spilled my guts, and then I thought my insurance was going to get cut off. That never happened. Most everything I ever worried about never happened. But I was, I had spoken one night, and I had a new guy with me, and maybe had 40 days or so, and I was half asleep on the way home, and I said, well, how's things been going? And he said, it's going really well. I can really feel my willpower kicking in. And boy, I woke up then, and I said, I have no power, and you don't either. And my power comes from my connection with the God of my understanding. And today I have a strong, static-free connection. I get up every morning at 5 and go on my back porch and do the things, the simple actions to make that happen. And the last prayer I say is, God, please guide me to who I can be helpful to today. That's the most important thing is going to happen in my day when that happens. And he does. All I got to do is suit up and show up. And it's a wonderful way to live. Who knew that doing things for others was where it was at? All my life I sought externally for the things that I thought would make me happy. And as a result, today I have a sense of well-being and a sense of purpose that our book talks about. Thank you.
Thanks, Will. We're going to move on to page 62, and I love these paragraphs that are very specific. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the Father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Kevin?
Yeah, I remember when I was when I first guy who took me through this book, took me through the steps. We used to meet at, I think it was the Epworth United Methodist Church, and there was a Tuesday night men's meeting, and like every time we go to that meeting, at the time his sponsor told him that he needs to go to a men's meeting once a week, so he made all the guys he sponsored go to this meeting, so we'd go with them to this meeting, and every time, all I remember is that we would stand in the arch of the church, and he would point to the keystone, it's like, that's the keystone, you know. And you have step one here, step two here, and the keystone at step three. And it's about the willingness. I had no idea what he was talking about, but he was referring to this passage, you know. And it's these first three steps here is where I really begin the journey into the simple actions. There's no work involved in one, two, and three. I'm sorry. If that's what your sponsor is telling you, there's no. The only work that I did in the first two steps was drinking. That's the work I did, and I got really miserable, and I eventually agreed to the ABCs. That's the work that comes through the first two steps. And the third step for me is about this idea that, I like to look at, you know, the first step is about, you know, the physical part. The second step is the mental insanity, and the third step is the spiritual. It's that selfishness and self-centeredness. And my sponsor always stressed to me is that once we take care of the spiritual, then that'll take care of the physical and mental aspect of alcoholism. You know, because when I try to stop drinking, you know, I'm basically insane. You know, like that's what my life looks like when I don't drink and don't do anything else. I go crazy. And all this stuff is basically telling me in this paragraph, when I read it, is that I don't really know how to turn my will and my life over to God, but these steps have shown me how. You know, that's how I seek God. You know, if the solution here is what it's saying is that I need to seek God, how do I do that? Well, just do the remaining steps, and that's how you do it. And you have a spiritual experience, a psychic change, all these things that I read about. And I'm like, I read these things with my sponsor, and I'm like, oh, this psychic change, I want that. I want this freedom. I want this contentment, this usefulness, because I never felt useful. I never felt content. I never felt free. So just going through this book and looking back at my life and my experiences in my drinking are what give me the motivation to do the remaining steps. So that's all I have.
I had a traumatic event occur when I was 4 years old, and I now know as a result of forming a personal relationship with God and working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that that is when fear became my constant companion, and I imprisoned myself in a cell of fear. When I discovered alcohol at 16 or 17, it was merely the solution. It took away all the anxiety, and I was able to talk to people and participate in whatever was happening, usually a party. It wasn't my alcoholic father. All I learned from him were the drinking patterns. My motherism part was all mine. And as I lived with untreated alcoholism, I behaved badly. I made poor choices. I caused harm to others, and I squandered my God-given gifts and talents. And now that I have that personal relationship, and the 12 steps are alive in my life, and I use them when I'm disturbed. And I had a sponsor who got me involved in service in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a free man. I was talking to Robert before the meeting. If I'd have walked into this room and I lived with untreated alcoholism, I would have looked for the weakest person that I felt comfortable with, and I would have just taken them hostage and talked to them and nobody else. Today, I can walk into this room and talk to anybody about anything. And I've passed through the arch. I'm a very fortunate person. And my sponsor said, after I'd had a spiritual awakening, and he said this to both Kevin and I one night when we were coming back from a meeting in Gloucester. He said, both of you surrendered unconditionally and yet did the work. That's how simple it is. Thank you.
We're going to continue on page 63. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy love, thy power, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Kevin?
One of the passages that I've underlined in my book talks about having a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. And my sponsor always stressed to me that it was my job to, once I took these steps and had a spiritual awakening, it was my job to carry that message to the next alcoholic. And that's what this sentence is telling me to do. And that's my job, you know. And I've taken that very seriously, you know, since then. Is it like, because this is life or death for me. If I'm not trying to carry this message to other alcoholics, then I am setting myself up to die an alcoholic death. You know, and that doesn't mean that I have to drink. You know, it could be insanity. It could be anything. And so in order for me to stay sober, I have to continue to try to carry this message and to be helpful, to do work, take action. Because that's what I've found gets me out of myself. If selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problems, the root of my troubles, then I need to get out of myself. How do I do that? Well, the first thing I learned to do is to help others, to be helpful. And in the beginning, you know, I can remember the first time, I think it was well, 3 or 4 months into my sobriety when I finally got a car. I bought this old like Pontiac Firebird for like $500, and it had like 250,000 miles on it. And I could, and like it's funny, it was so rusty that I could see like the road through the floorboard. I could see little holes, and I could see the road as I was driving down the road. But I was just so grateful that I had that car, you know, when I was doing sobriety. And my sponsor said that, you know, you can help give people rides, and that's what I did. Like, I didn't feel like I could be helpful. But then it's like when I started to do that, I started to realize that, like, oh, you know, whenever I give these guys rides to meetings, you know, I'm not thinking about myself. Like for that 30 minutes or whatever that we're in the car together, you know? And that became like that became the beginning of me trying to be helpful, you know, give people rides. And then eventually it was like, you know, I start talking to people, and the more I did that stuff, the less and less I thought about myself. And for me, I love that part where it says, we were reborn. Because though at times I can still have the same thoughts that I did, you know. The good news is like, you know, they don't have to lead to actions, the wrong actions, you know. And today, I have a way out. And the way that I was taught is that what we do here is, We change our actions to change our thinking, you know, not the other way around. I don't try to change my thinking to change my actions. It's that I take these new actions, whether I want to or not, and it changes the way I think. And that has been the case, because those simple things of you know, meeting with a sponsor once a week and going through these steps show me how to live the third step prayer. You know, and I like the part about where it says, "Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear wings to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life." So I used to think that it was about asking God to take away my difficulties so that I feel better about them, but no, it's about God taking those difficulties away so I can show somebody else that they can overcome the same difficulty. You know, and the first thing is the fact that I've recovered from alcoholism. You know, I am an alcoholic, but I don't drink. I can share that experience with another alcoholic so that they can find the same solution that I found. And that applies to everything, all the difficulties that I have in my life. But I always think that it's still about me. You know, it's still about me feeling better. And another thing, it says, "Relieve me of the bondage of self, so that I may better do thy will." My first sponsor made me read this every morning. And then once we got through the fourth and fifth step, he had me read this, and then the seventh step, and then we went on, and as we went through the steps, I would read the tenth step. And I didn't really understand that at the time. Like, why do I have to call this guy in the morning? And why do I have to do these prayers? And what I realized is that I found in sobriety that when I don't do this stuff, you know, self-will will run riot. You know, and it doesn't take long. You know, it's like once I walk out, it's like, it's funny. It's like, it seems that resentments crop up the amount of time that it takes me to get from my bed and into my shower. That's been true for me. When I don't do this, like as soon as I get in the shower, that's when the resentments pop up. And I'm sitting in the shower, putting in the shampoo, and all of a sudden I just start thinking about that one person that yesterday, and how, oh man, he's such a jerk, and I really hate that guy. You know, why, how dare you did that? And it just starts going, and it just starts spinning, and I've had a period in sobriety where that went on for like a good 3 or 4 months, and I was just miserable. I can remember, I don't know why I'm talking about this, but I remember that I was holding on to this resentment. I can remember I was downtown Portsmouth late at night, and I was walking by the bars and just like looking at the bars, just looking into the bars and looking at the gay atmosphere. And I was thinking, you know, I wasn't thinking about drinking, but I was thinking about, you know, looks like they're having fun. I wonder if I would have fun if I went in there. You know, and I remember telling my sponsor about this, and he's like, well, go in and have a seat. And I'm like, well, no, I don't want to do that, you know. And but see, that's the type of stuff that goes on in my mind when I'm not doing these simple things, when I'm not saying these prayers, when I'm not talking to my sponsor, when I'm not doing inventories. Like, it starts with the spiritual, and then it goes to insanity, and then it leads to the drink. And that's how it goes. And it's that simple. And luckily today, I don't have to take the drink. You know, I have a choice. The choice I have is to do this, or I can take a drink and or die in alcoholic death. I mean, that's it. Door number one, door number two. You know, I have two choices, but it's die or do this. You know, so thank you. That's all I have.
What resonates so much with me is we had a new employer being all powerful. He provided what we needed. If we kept close to him and performed his work well. And as I said earlier, I get up early and I say my prayers and do my reading and I begin to establish conscious contact with God. And then most mornings I get to take a power walk, sometimes two, sometimes four, 3 miles. And that conscious contact is when it's really most intense, because I'm alert. And not only get the physical benefits, but the spiritual. And then I begin to see which meeting God is going to guide me to that day. I used to choose the meeting. I try to let him choose the meeting. I can't tell you exactly how that works, but I can just tell you, just about every meeting I go to, I know where I'm supposed to be. And I stick my hand out to the new and still suffering alcoholic. And I participate in service in Alcoholics Anonymous, and when all the sponsees have gone away, I fall back on that. So recently I took a 10-day vacation to South Florida. And I continued to do every single one of those things. And God guided me to a wonderful AA meeting at 8 in the morning, and I went every day. I got to do my walk on the beach at sunrise on the Gulf. And then after the meeting, I'd come back and swim 10 laps. And then I'd take a nap, and I'd start my second day, and I'd go play golf. And then I'd go down and have dinner with my stepfather. God smiles upon me. That's why I like an early meeting, because he smiles on me the rest of the day, because I've done my work. When I perform the work, and this is the work for me. And it doesn't matter where I am. I can't, you know, if I have a legitimate outside issue, I miss going to a meeting every so often, not very often. And the more I do in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more power God gives me to do more. That's a wonderful thing for a guy that laid in bed for 2 years. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing. Well, thank you, guys. That is those are the paragraphs that we had laid out for this meeting. I'll give Kevin and Will an opportunity if you want to share a couple minutes or clean up anything you might have left out. Otherwise, I will close the meeting. So while you're thinking about that, I'm going to pass the seventh tradition basket.
I would like to say something.
I knew he'd talk.
So did everybody else. When I came to AA, Kevin was the first guy I really started talking to. And it turned out that we had the same day of the month as our sobriety date, July 27th. He was a couple of years ahead of me, and here I was, 59, and he was 25 or whatever. And he's the guy that I'm closest to in this program, and we call each other and talk about the things that are going on. We can help each other. It's no coincidence that we had the same sponsor. That man taught us. He took a different approach with each of us, but he taught us these things. And how wonderful that at my age, 63, here I have as the person I'm closest to in AA, a guy at Kevin's age. I believe I have discovered through the 12 steps in a personal relationship with God the fountain of youth. And it has nothing to do with the way I look or my memory. Because I played golf Saturday and I left my golf clubs on the cart. When I got there Sunday, I'd opened the back of my car and my golf clubs weren't there. In any event, it's an inner thing. The fountain of youth, I love being active, and I love, Steve often said, Will, you have to participate in this program to get the full benefit. And I believe I get the full benefit. Thank you.
Thanks, Will. All right. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? Lydia.
Good evening. My name is Lydia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lydia.
On August 15th, Thursday night at 5:30, 49th Street Living Sober is having a speaker, and Kate, for no reason, please come and join us at 5:30. We have plenty of parking. School's not in session. So that's August 15th, 5:30.
Graham, alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
This home group's hosting a mini conference on Friday, October the 25th, and Saturday, October the 26th. There's orange flyers on the table for it. It's a free event, and we're flying in a speaker from Las Vegas, and he's going to talk about alcoholism and AA's solution to alcoholism. It's completely free. We're also doing a potluck lunch. The only thing to remember is it's not in this church. It's in Ghent United Methodist. But all the details are on the flyer. It's in October. Come along. It's going to be great.
Thank you.
Orange flyer. Any other announcements? Nothing happening, huh? The Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. And just to welcome you by first name, is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? If we could just get your first name.
Hi, Charles.
Welcome.
I'm Brian.
Hey, Brian, welcome.
I'm Trey. I'm alcoholic.
Trey.
Hey, Trey.
Welcome.
Welcome.
My name is Charlie. I'm
alcoholic. Welcome.
Welcome. Anybody shy? One more? Come on. Give me one more. All right, sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. There's literature available on the table to my right, your left. Please see any home group member after the meeting. We'll help you out with a book if you need one. There's lots of stuff up there. If you can fold it, it's free. And in closing, I'd like to thank everyone who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at
the Mexican place.
That Mexican place on 22nd and Colonial. Plaza something. It's awful. It's absolutely terrible. Most of us hate it, but it's a really good time. We can go there and sit. We have fun. The food's terrible, but the portions are big. Is anybody inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164 tonight? Go. Yeah, nice and loud.
Our book is meant to be subjective only. We realize we know only little. God's confidence flows more to you and to us. Ask him to be in morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you have to God. Seek purity of relationship with him is right. And great benefit comes to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Shall we circle up and close?
Thank
July
you.
July 27th is my father's
birthday. Thank
birthday.
You.
I'm doing well. It's a good day.
That was great. You guys are we all connected? Trey, would you lead us in the Lord's Prayer tonight?